Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Accra 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better. Today's guest is Pete Lopez. Born in Miami, Florida, Pete's family moved to New York when he was an infant. Raised in a working-class family, Pete learned the value of hard work, the importance of education, and the advantages of living in a small rural town. Pete scrubbed floors, stocked shelves, baled hay, and scraped fish in order to finance his education. Pete graduated from SUNY Cobleskill in SUNY Albany. He holds a bachelor's degree in public affairs with a minor in environmental studies and a master's degree in public administration. After receiving his bachelor's, Pete secured a position with the New York State Senate and was elected as a Schoharie Village trustee at the age of 21. After 21 years of service to the state legislature and 12 years as a local official, Pete was encouraged to seek the position of Schoharie County Clerk, a position he held for 3 years prior to becoming a New York State Assemblyman in 2006. A strong advocate for volunteerism, Pete has served as an altar assistant trainer, cantor and lector, Red Cross water safety instructor, youth soccer director and coach, youth ski club advisor, black belt karate instructor, Eagle Scout project advisor, community pool and Main Street committee chairman. Pete has also established a local chapter of Habitat for Humanity and has been honored with numerous awards throughout his career, including the State University of New York's Golden Anniversary Chancellor's Recognition Award, the New York State Mason's General Douglas MacArthur Award for Service to Youth, and the Times Journal Star of the Year Award in recognition of his efforts to help with recovery from the devastation of Hurricanes Irene and Lee. When asked what motivates him, Pete simply responds, "I love my community and am driven to improve the quality of life for everyone I can. Although challenging and time-consuming, I do my best to fulfill this goal each day." Pete, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for letting me join you.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Can I ask one question?
You may.
How do you find all the time to fit all this into one day?
I'm an old man.
You don't look like an old man. So the last
many
time
years in the making, you know.
the last time we met, well, the first time we met, it was in Prattsville.
Prattsville, right.
And that was for...
at the Mudfest.
Mudfest, yeah.
Yeah, Mudfest. Kind of a bittersweet time, really.
Yeah. But as we experienced that night, it was a very, very positive evening, if I remember correctly. It was absolutely mobbed. And, you know, what was really refreshing to me was that there were so many political figures, if you can call, you know, if that's the correct term, out and about that night, including yourself, and they were all willing to talk and get involved and enjoy the evening. So
yeah, and for me, I like the term public servant, and my joining the celebration was really a reflection of a lot of time spent in the community helping them recover, and still doing that to this day. We were just my wife Bridget and I were back in Prattsville just this week working on the bridge that we're trying to reestablish and prepare the community for resiliency in the future.
Right. Now, one of the things that I noticed and read in your biography was that you had managed to get something done with the Gilboa Dam with regards to having that as a flood. Can you explain what that was?
Yeah, well, it's for those of us who live in the shadow of the New York City reservoirs, the dam was built. It was adverse possession. The city took property, basically, and has used it for drinking water. Mm. And up until recently, the dam has never been used for flood control. And in the midst of, in the wake of Irene and Lee and in the face of Sandy, we were facing a similar situation. And so we prevailed upon the city and the state of New York and said, "Hey, folks, we need to use this dam to our advantage. Release the water so it can absorb the impact, the brunt of the next storm." And
yes. And
so for the first time in history of the dam, we used it for that purpose. So we're actually working to make that a standard policy with the city, not just for Gilboa, but throughout the watershed.
Is there any opposition to that, or do people see that as a sensible option?
People are very excited about it. The challenge, of course, is the city has multiple objectives it has to manage, So besides doing drinking water, they have to do controlled releases for wildlife habitat to satisfy Trout Unlimited and others. So the only opposition would be just to make sure that, one, they don't deplete their drinking water reserve, mm-hmm. and then, two, the other uses are attended to. But what they've decided to do is create gaps. So they use the term voids. So during a certain period of the year, they'll keep the water level 10-20% below normal to absorb in case of it, usually during the hurricane season. And that is enough to absorb the blunt and blunt the impact of a future storm. So we're very excited about that.
That's excellent.
The reservoirs in the Catskills, I think, are really fascinating in that they are where towns once were. And I've heard that when the Gilboa Dam, the reservoir gets low enough, you can see the steeple of a church.
It's true.
I've never seen that.
It's true. And actually, there's a restaurant in Gilboa Clark's, which has quite a photo gallery of the communities that were there and some of the history of the people before the dam was constructed. It's a great place. Good food there, too.
Mm. Now, one of the things that I learned as a result of the flood in Prattsville and Wyndham was that these areas in the Catskills are built on what are called alluvial fans. I don't really know that much about geology, I'll be honest.
That's okay. I'm following you.
But the what happened was there was kind of a, for lack of a better phrase, rubble filled in the part of a void, like, you know, maybe like a chasm, and that's the part of the land where places like Prattsville became established, and they're right next to the water. And if you can imagine the water, the river being like an artery going to the heart, it becomes impinged, and when there is a lot of water and a lot of overspill, then the river's width and ability is such that it can't handle the amount of water, and therefore it floods onto the part that caused the impingement in the first
Absolutely.
Place.
And Palinville, for example, on the other side near Hunter, is very similar. So you have these narrow valleys, the water's traveling very fast, is eroding all this, carrying all the sediment, gets to a spot where it slows down and it drops everything.
Yeah.
And it just, all this rubble and debris just drops, and you're right, it just spreads out. So people lose track that naturally streams and rivers need a place to spread out to take the energy out.
Yeah.
And so that has to be part of the engineering of a stream as we look at flood control, flood resiliency. Where do we give the ability for the stream to spread out, take the energy out, and protect life and property? So that's part of our challenge now as we deal with hundreds of miles of streams throughout the region. Six of my counties were in states of emergency during Irene and Lee.
Yeah.
And it's a massive undertaking.
And you know, whoever in our world, in terms of leaders and people in power, want to accept it or not, the overall overwhelming view is that climate change is having a huge impact on the earth, and therefore we need to make sure that we rise to the challenge of that and make changes. And one of the things that I do see that you're involved in is alternative forms of fuel, etc.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Energy,
yeah.
And I'm all for that too.
You're going to have to meet our little Jeep. It's a little biodiesel.
Well, I was going to come to that. I was going to ask you about that. Does your Jeep smell of hamburgers?
It does.
Oh,
it smells like McDonald's, especially when we can get the biodiesel in it.
Right, right.
And Bridget likes to drive it.
Yeah,
it's fun.
So I heard somebody
got a little spunk.
Yeah, somebody told me years ago that they got some. I think it was from a well-known donut place.
Krispy Kreme.
That they get the oil from them to put in their car, and they would be driving in the road, and their car smelled of, you know, like cooking donuts and stuff like that.
It does. It's got a cool smell to it. It's clean. Very. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun.
But you know, but on a serious note, you know, there's obviously wind power, and one of the things that they're doing in Britain, off the shores of Britain, is wave power.
Yes.
I think these things
tidal
are
wave generators,
right? Absolutely
wave generators.
Vital to how we go forward.
They are. As a matter of fact, I serve on the Environmental Conservation Committee, and we were just talking about that with the Public Service Commission. And ultimately, the big challenge with renewables, especially wind and solar, hydro, is that it tends to be intermittent.
Yes.
So one of our challenges is, what are we doing to build an infrastructure that allows us to capture the energy when it's generated, hold it in abeyance, and then release it when it's needed. So, so ironically, near Prattsville is the Gilboa Pump Storage Project, right, which pumps water up, uses kinetic energy, pumps it to a reservoir at peak, and then during peak demand releases it through a tunnel and generates electricity just using the kinetic release of the kinetic energy. So,
oh, cool. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it's a big storage battery. So we need more projects like that or similar storage mechanisms so that solar, wind, hydro can be more effective as a regular source.
I have high hopes for batteries, you know, like the new Tesla power pack that you can buy and put in your basement and
exactly
helpful.
That's another. Many people who are off the grid, they have battery arrays in their homes.
Yeah.
So they'll store it in their battery systems, and when the power is needed, they'll draw from the battery and then recharge it when the sun's shining or the wind's blowing.
Yeah, and right now, you know, it's expensive. It's not really practical, maybe for the mass public. But you know, I look back and think of how far battery technology has come just in the past 10 years. You know, 20 years ago, there's no way an iPhone would have been possible unless you had like 10D batteries hooked to it. And
that's my biggest frustration is they use in economic terms, they talk about barrier to entry. It's just prohibitive. So our goal as a society should be to make the technology available and affordable.
Yes.
So people can get it in their homes and make use of it. Net metering is kind of a step in between. And you see these solar companies that are installing the hardware on the home and at no expense to the owner, but then they don't give the full discount of the solar, but they give a blended rate. So your rate is reduced. But I look forward to the day when I'm off the umbilical cord of the utility. I think that's exciting.
Yeah, my girlfriend, Julia, she would love to be doing that. She would love to be off the grid.
Yeah,
and
it's
have
fun.
Chickens.
It sounds mysterious. I'm off the grid. Yeah, it's, kind of, it's like a spy movie.
You know, but there was a program years ago in the 70s, The Good Life, it was called, in Britain. And the idea was that one neighbour in a middle class area decided to live off the fat of the land in a urban area, you know, have chickens and all that. And the middle class neighbour next door was ridiculing her. And it seemed like a silly notion back then. Nowadays, it's more of a realistic notion, and it's becoming, you know,
it is
something that we would say, well, that's attainable.
Yeah, it is, and people are yearning for it in many ways. And look at our food production too. People want local food. They want to see sustainability. That phrase is now having meaning throughout our
farm
community.
To table,
farm to table. Yeah. Sure, 100-mile diet. All of that.
People. You know, I've had this discussion with my friends before. You know, if you look at television programs and there's maybe 10 programs on that, really they're not very good programs. And people say, yeah, but people are watching them. But people are watching them because that's all they've got. If you give somebody something better, they're going to watch something better. It's the same principle with life. If you give somebody an opportunity that's better than what they have, they're going to take it.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. So. Fly with it, so to speak. Just like Pete's first song, Gonna Fly Now, which is the Rocky theme.
Oh, cool. Oh, way to start. You guys are great.
Mike is known for
this. You're reading my mind.
His segue ability is fantastic.
It's something that I've worked on since childhood. But it was composed by Bill Conti, with lyrics by Carol Connors and Ann Robbins, performed by Daetta Little, Nelson Pickford. The song plays as Rocky trains running up the 72 stone steps leading to the entrance of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. And it was nominated, actually, for an Academy Award. Pete, why the Rocky theme?
Well, I come from a similar background. We come from poverty. We come from a little bit of adversity. And I guess what appeals to me about the Rocky character is his ability to withstand a challenge. And it's funny, I have the complete series. Bridget and I have watched it ad nauseum. I make her ill sometimes, but she's actually very good because we both enjoy it.
Can I ask you a serious question?
Please.
Have you ever said these words? Yo, Bridget.
Oh, repeatedly. Repeatedly, absolutely. And actually, as part of our honeymoon, we actually ran the steps, Bridget.
Oh, you did?
Bridget ran it in her wedding gown, and I was in my tux. She was barefooted. We ran the steps.
Where's the video?
I have a little clip.
Yes?
We have a little clip. We haven't shared it publicly.
All right.
Yeah. So it has real meaning to me. So,
now, I know that you
I was so excited. I was like a little kid. You should see the video. I'm like, like a little puppy dog wagging my tail. I was so excited.
I know that you're a black belt.
I am.
In karate. So I just saw Bridget giving you a stare there about this video. So I'm sure that with this, the karate moves, you'll be able to fend.
Well, it's as Mr. Miyagi would say, though, when it comes to Bridget, no can defend. So no matter how skilled I am, no can defend, Daniel-san.
So shall we? Right. So shall we listen to this song? I mean, it's a fantastic song.
Oh, it's a great song. But it
wasn't Sylvester Stallone's first choice.
It's actually the ringtone on my phone.
Oh, it is?
I'm sorry. Awesome. It's too much.
Out of curiosity, have you seen the Creed movie that's just come out?
We loved it.
I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, we LUV love. That's the best kind. We loved it. We loved it.
What's the Creed? I don't know what it is.
I don't know.
It's Apollo Creed's son, who didn't know he was his son. The mother finds him in an orphanage and brings him home, and he learns his history, and then he goes back to Rocky Balboa to train.
Is that the one he got the Golden Globe for?
I don't know. I think so. It's recent, very recent. Right. So we don't have that movie. That's for my birthday list, sweetheart. I have the whole series except for that one now.
Have you never boxed? Have you ever took up boxing?
It's very similar with the karate. I did a little boxing just for fun. I did an exhibition match with, the Haitian sensation, probably about 8 years ago in Catskill. We did a fundraiser for cancer. So I went three rounds with the Haitian sensation.
And did you win?
Wow.
Well, I don't know. I survived it.
That's what I said.
But predictably.
A will to survive.
Exactly. But it was good training.
Excellent.
So well, just think of boxing, just adding your legs as well. So it's boxing with legs.
So, what do you think of that sport then?
What do I think of it?
No, boxing. What's that one where you can kick each other and punch and bite and all
UFC.
That?
Oh, the UFC. Bridget's going to look at me a little disdainfully. I enjoy watching it myself. Yeah. It's difficult. I actually went to a couple classes for the ultimate fights, as they call it. You know, and it's a difficult sport. Many of the fights end by submission, But the one piece, and we talk about this in New York because there's a bill to legalize it, and there's a lot of debate over the bill because it can be pretty rugged. Mm. I get concerned about the ground and pound when they're coming down with elbows on someone who's pinned to the ground. I'd like to see pads on the knees or elbows and maybe get them up sooner so they're not on the ground so much. But yeah. I enjoy watching it myself.
You know, Mike, I'm sitting closest to Pete. And he's got a black belt.
And I'm thankful for it.
He loves UFC, whatever you call it. He loves boxing. Can we swap seats?
No. Yeah.
But
no.
But there's a little difference, though. And I've talked about this with my family. Again, in the UFC, your goal is to go out there and beat the pudding out of your opponent. True martial art training is defense of your own and your loved one's lives. You don't go out to use it for sport or to inflict damage. It's self-defense, so that discipline goes with it.
Before we hit the song, can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Have you ever caught a fly with chopsticks?
I caught a fly with my bare hands.
That's impressive, though.
Yeah.
I can barely catch a fly with a towel, a beach towel, waving it through the air. They're like the most miraculous. Yeah. Darn animals.
All right,
I haven't tried the chopsticks, because I want to save that for dinner, so I don't want to catch a fly with the chopsticks.
All right.
was the theme from Rocky. We have Pete Lopez in the studio, and we're talking about all different things. The next thing we're going to talk about is a fishing pole.
Perfect.
What kind of fishing pole, Pete?
I just use a spinning reel, you know, freshwater pole. I'm just a basic amateur fisherman, but we love to fish. Now, I also loves to fish.
Do you like worm and bobber, sit, relax, have a Coca-Cola?
Yeah.
Or do you more actively like bob?
Most of the time, lure? It's just the worm. But depending on who's with us, sometimes it's cast them in, cast them out, depends. But actually, there's a secret if you're going to be a good worm fisherman.
What's that?
Well, some of our listeners may be a little disgusted by this, but you got to make sure there's nothing on your hands. So no colognes or bug sprays, because that repels the fish. They sense that. Mm. But you have to put a little spit on the worm.
Oh.
And get it nice and mucousy, and that kind of masks the human scent. And also, the second trick is if...
But if you've just been drinking coffee?
You've been drinking coffee? No, I don't know.
Or beer or
yeah,
Coca-Cola?
Well just, I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. It might attract them a little bit. Who knows? But the other piece is if it gets hit. If you hit it... And there's a little bit of worm left, you keep it on there. That's like gold. So you just add more worm to it. You don't take that off.
So
a couple tricks of the trade for our listeners.
The fish can tell that other fish have been interested.
Oh, yeah. It just reels them right in. Absolutely.
What kind of fish do you like to fish for?
Whatever we can get. But usually we like freshwater lakes, so bass and lake trout and whatever we can get. Otsego Lake is one of my favorite lakes to fish in. We like to swim and fish there, but wherever.
Now, I'm pulling rank here. I can't tell you the location, but we have been invited to a secret location in the Catskills.
Trout fishing.
Fly fishing.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool. I've never been fly fishing.
From a master fly fisher.
Awesome. Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
That's an art. That's an art form.
Judd Weisberg.
Yeah. But he's going to make us get up at like 4 in the morning, so yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah, so we'll not be going.
I'm just a ham and egger. That's an art form. Fly fishing.
Now, there are some fishermen's superstitions that I got from the NOAA.gov website, and this one I think is particularly relevant to today. The first is, a woman on board makes the seas angry and is an omen of bad luck. All the more reason Bridget probably should not come to the cabin to accompany.
See, I have a big problem with that. Because that was my first request, and I was denied. I said, but Bridget come? No. Why can't you? No. Stop whining. Okay.
Yep. That's right. One person. Bridget can be on another show.
I tried.
And she will not be able to bring you.
So.
Life's not fair.
And another interesting fact, black cats are considered good luck and will bring a sailor home from the sea. And also, Pete, if you play a fiddle or guitar, the fish will come to the surface because they love the music. And one of the objects you'd like to bring is...
A classical guitar.
That's right.
Yeah.
And if you get snagged and you snap your line, you could take one of those.
Just unstring the guitar
strings,
and use it. That's right.
You know,
loop them together. That's true. That's true. But
don't need to fret about it. Sorry.
Oh, golly.
Oh, geez.
Andy.
Oh, gosh. Hits a responsive chord, though. That's okay.
You guys are way out of tune tonight.
Here.
Come on now. So, shall we move on to the next song, Mike?
The next song is going to be Boondocks by Little Big Town.
So, Pete, why this song?
Well, it's funny because I never really was a fan of country music. I just love music of all types, so classical and jazz and contemporary, you know, rock, you name it. And I never really got into country music, but this band in particular, Little Big Town, it just they're almost like the Fleetwood Mac of country music. They just blend.
That's a good way of describing them.
Yeah, they're very eclectic. They're very creative. Their harmonies are phenomenal. And you'll hear it in this song.
Yeah, they kind of share the vocals, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And there's at the end of this song, you'll hear a round that they do. It's just phenomenal. It's funny. They talk about country music, and they say if you want to be happy, you play country music backwards. You get your dog back, you get your wife back, you get your house back. But this group in particular is just very moving, and I think they've been nominated. They just won some awards. They've been recognized finally for their talent. They're just very talented.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You know, they got off to a I wouldn't say a bad start. They were, you know, it was very they've they were with a record label, and the record label kind of went bust, and they were on another record label.
They didn't
go anywhere. And all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, they've started to pick up momentum, and they've picked up, and they've won quite a few awards. They've been hitting the top of the charts in the country.
Country music awards. As I say, just very creative, very talented, and a lot of their lyrics are just very moving. So enjoy their music.
So you're taking this song just because you want to listen to some nice, soothing, Fleetwood Mac-esque music.
Well, I'm a country boy too, so it just brings back that feel of being home, and this particular song talks about being home, it's cool.
Fish hole, 5 o'clock poker on Saturday night, church on Sunday morning.
You get a line, you get a line, I get a pole.
We'll go fishing in the crawfish
down
hole.
In the 5 o'clock
poker on Saturday night, church on Sunday morning.
You get a line,
you get a line,
I get a pole.
We'll go fishing in the crawfish
down
hole.
In the
5 o'clock poker on Saturday night, church on Sunday morning.
That was Boondocks by Little Big Town. That was excellent.
Just really. Pure fun. Yeah,
it's
just pure
it.
Fun. Yeah,
I loved it. I was just saying to you off mic there. Yeah. Sounded a bit kind of bluegrassy.
I like jumping into the round when they're singing the round. I like to pick one of the lines and just sing it along. It's fun.
It's just hard not to tap your toes when you're
tap
listening.
Tap your toes. You just can't avoid being happy and relaxed, and it's cool.
Yeah. So good choice. Really enjoyed that.
The song really matches up with a few of the things you're bringing, playing the guitar, they're bringing a fishing pole. Another object you'd like to bring is a rowing canoe.
Yeah, actually was a gift for Father's Day from Bridget. And we like to fish, and we like to be outdoors, and we've been searching for something that would work, that would meet kind of our needs. And this canoe is, it's broad, and it has oar locks on it. And it's just so cool. So we put it on the rack of the Jeep, and off we go, and we're off to adventure. And it's pretty stable. It's very stable. You can be in a lake, and a big boat can go by, and we just bob in the water, and it's just pure fun.
Catch a fish, fry it up.
Yeah.
Save the grease, pour it in the Jeep.
Pour it in the Jeep. Yeah, we're ready to go. eat some black bass
for dinner.
Now
this is sustainability.
Yeah, it's just so cool, and it's just pure fun. So so we could paddle it, or I can let her relax and sunbathe, and I'll row and
spit on the worms.
Spit on the worms, sing some bluegrass to her. So we just have some fun.
You know, I have myself and my girlfriend, we like to go kayaking.
Yeah.
When I broke my arm in this, you know, at the end of the summer, the first thing that went through my mind, one of the first things that went through my mind, the first thing, obviously, was, can I go?
Right.
Can
of course,
I go
of course.
Kayaking again? But not just that, can I lift them off and on the calf?
That's it.
And as a result of it, you know, having broke my arm, the kayak stayed on the cars until like December.
Oh, I understand. Well, that was one of our tests. We had to see if the two of us could get it in position and put it on and off the vehicle. Mm. So that was actually a condition of sail. So we tested it.
You know, once you're on the rivers and stuff like that, it's fantastic. There's a couple of places that we've been where you've got a busy road, and then you just, you know, come off of the busy road and go into the stream that runs underneath the road. And within about 5 minutes, it's as if you're in another world.
Oh, sure.
You know, and then there's like little fish jumping.
Oh, we love it. We love it.
You know, would you call them tortoises and
sure.
in the water? And
sure. Oh, it's just tranquil. It's like going into another world. And, yeah. And especially if it has a little bit of a marsh around it too. You get lily pads and
yeah.
all sorts of, yeah, it's just pure fun.
One time we were in, and we, you know, this is not far from Poughkeepsie. We were on one of the marsh parts, and as you say there, and there was this herring bird.
Herrings, oh, they're beautiful.
And it would fly in front of us and land, and then every time we got like maybe 20 yards near it, it would fly again.
Yeah.
And it was as if it was leading us out of the marsh again.
Cool.
And it was like, this went on for like 25 minutes.
Mm.
And it was, you know, it's just cool. Well, yeah. What better way in a summer evening to spend your night?
Just to escape.
Rather than sitting
yeah,
watching
just to escape.
Rubbish on the TV, you know.
Exactly. It's just great. To escape, enjoy the world a little bit and leave your cares behind a little. And
that's what it is. It's very, yeah. very relaxing.
It is very relaxing.
Really enjoy it.
You know, in 1944, Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring premiered at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. And it's spring in that it's a stream or a creek, not the season Appalachian
yes,
Spring.
Yes.
And this is the next song that you've chosen, Pete.
Oh, I love Aaron Copland.
And
yeah,
and it is such a beautiful work. He won the Pulitzer Prize for it. And I think it just illustrates so well what you guys are talking about, you know, seclusion, isolation, being back in nature. And what does the song mean for you?
Well, it just again brings back our roots. It's so American and so much representative of the region we live in. And you can feel the energy in it, and just close your eyes and just kind of just picture the environment as the piece moves forward. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Here it is, excerpts from Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra. That's 90.7 FM. Today in the studio, we have Pete Lopez, and that was excerpts from Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copeland. Pete, have you ever gone hiking on the Appalachian Trail or made it out to the Appalachians?
Well, technically, we are the northern reach of the Appalachians. So I haven't been further south, but you know, certainly Bridget and I like to hike. So throughout the mountains in this region, we like to go out and walk. She's pretty rugged. I have trouble keeping up with her. She's pretty nimble. But no, we love to go out and enjoy the outdoors. And as many people know, our region is just attracts people. It's just the beauty of it. So whether it's the Hudson River School of Art, you know, with the beautiful paintings, you know, we have Olana and sure, Thomas Cole, you know, that it just captures the imagination, the land of Rip Van Winkle.
Yeah, you know, Frederick Douglass.
But we have just beautiful trails and just in this region. But no, we love to go out and enjoy the outdoors. We actually went to top of Pratt Rock for the first time. We've never climbed that.
You know, I've never been up there either.
Yeah,
I need to check that out.
It was a beautiful view. And also in my home valley is Broman's Nose, which is not a big hike, but it's beautiful. That's actually where I proposed to Bridget was on that. We actually put snowshoed up it, and that's where I proposed to her.
Oh,
so,
wonderful!
And
wonderful.
That's part of the trail system as well. So it's great, and enjoy the outdoors.
You're just a romantic at heart.
Can't help it. Can't help it. Can't help it.
And you know, on kind of a completely unrelated topic, side note, I was reading about Appalachian Spring, and I hadn't done a whole lot of research on the song in the past, but right off the bat, at the beginning of the article, it was talking about how when this premiered, it's a ballet, and the ballet had a set, and the set was designed by a Japanese-American sculptor, and this premiered in 1944, and I thought to myself, well, gosh, you know, what about, this is during World War II, what about the Japanese internment?
Wow.
And I thought, that's really fascinating that at this time, you would have at this you know really important work a Japanese sculptor. So I looked into it, and his name was Osamu Noguchi, and he had achieved fame by the 1930s. He was born in the late 1800s, and actually volunteered to be interned at a camp at the Poston Camp in Arizona during World War II, he had before that time tried to get the camp shut down and spoke in front of Congress about Japanese Americans and their patriotism. That didn't work. He volunteered to be interned just kind of to make a statement. And while there, he designed baseball fields, pools, cemeteries, none of it built. He didn't feel he was making a difference, and he was able to then leave and return to New York. And from there, he was able to design this set. But I just thought, what a fascinating story.
Yeah, what a testimony.
Absolutely,
right,
yeah.
And,
right.
And to go with such a marvelous work. And I think it speaks, especially in such a difficult time when America was facing trouble both abroad and at home, at a historic level, that the true America could still come through.
No, that's very moving.
And
very cool.
Absolutely.
So that really that meant a lot to me. Another item you'd like to bring, Pete, is The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. Tell us about that book.
Well, it's a book that kind of describes and helps really serve as a guide. It's a very reflective book. It's a Christian-based book. It's based on Scripture, but it's really focused on what are we here for and what's our purpose. And it's the premise is that all of us have a purpose in life. We just need to find what it is. And the hope is that we do it in a way that's constructive and uplifting of our neighbors, of our community. And so Bridget and I have been reading the book. She's been through it twice. We've been through it a couple times, and we just reflect on it. And ultimately, it's something that I keep close to my heart, both of us. We love people. We love being in community. We love lifting other people up, and when you reflect on it, that's really all of our purpose is to be here for each other. None of us were created to be alone, and each of us have a role to help make life better for each other. And that's really it's an inspirational read, and it's something that we take to heart.
Well, I think you really nailed it there, Pete. Especially since the first sentence of the book reads, "It's not about you," In your bio, it talks about all the volunteer work that you've done and emphasize that. Why is volunteer work and giving to others so important to you?
You know, it's just joyful. And again, our family came from nothing. So if you can imagine, we moved to Schoharie. I was 12 at the time, and we're half Puerto Rican, lower middle class. And we come to this small rural community not knowing anyone. And my mother just trying to help us connect. She had us in everything. We were in sports, we were in music, we were in band, we're in church service, we're in scouting. And what we found was a simple connection with our neighbor, a joy of being in community, and really just a sense that what I've learned is that none of us are self-made. So it's really a function of many people in the community have contributed to me, my livelihood, my growth, that of my family. And so the volunteerism for me is just a way of celebrating community, but also a way of giving back. And it's just pure joy. We can't help ourselves. Bridget and I talk about this all the time because often volunteerism is understated. And we live in a world where people are so, increasingly, they're so focused. There's a self-focus, but to find individuals and people in community who are willing to give of themselves is something that we want to celebrate and support. So it's just something that's inside us, and it's just pure joy. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
One of the things that you said at the beginning when you were talking there was, you know, you mentioned class. I think it'd be great if we could live in a society where the idea of class is not there.
Understood.
And that we're all just human beings. I think when I look at things like the floods and, you know, things that happen that are negative, have a negative impact on all of our towns and society, and I think there comes of it sometimes good things. And the idea of the sense of community coming together, the idea of looking at, having to look at each other and stripped bare.
Exactly. And it's funny you say that.
How can we help each other?
Because ultimately, and this is just my view of the world, and again, I come from so many different worlds. I'm half Puerto Rican, English, Scotch, Dutch, German, Miami-born, upstate country boy. And so people are, you know,
go
figure.
Could you say that again?
Yeah, three times fast. but people are so happy to place labels on each other, so and to put people in boxes. And what I find is that, and this has just been my observation, is your ethnicity, your gender, your education, your money, none of that matters, and none of that should matter. So the floods, as you pointed out, just laid everything bare. And it was just you and your neighbor, and what were your needs, and how could you help? And it's funny, sometimes I have that observation, too, when you think about it, when the national anthem plays and everyone's unified singing it together or paying attention to it, everything's stripped away. And it's just there's this connection that defies all these categories. And that's really who we are. That's really who we are as a society. We sometimes just lose track of that. We get caught up in the heat of the moment and rhetoric and sound bites and labels.
When I was a teenager, there was a line in a lyric from one of my favorite artists, Chris Rea, English guitarist, singer songwriter, and one of the lines in one of his songs was basically, all you have, regardless of what happens in that day, all you have at the end of every day really is the sound of your own breathing. And it doesn't matter how much money you have, how much status you have, how much power you have. That's all you have at the end of the day. It's the sound of your own breathing.
That's right. And if you can focus on that, it's really very liberating. You don't worry about it. You just focus on what can you bring to the table? How can you help? Each individual does their best. And It's just something that I feel very strongly about.
And Pete, you know, you've been recognized by others, I think, for this great selfless attitude. As we said in the beginning in your bio, the Times Journal Star of the Year Award was given to you for all of your help with the recovery in Hurricanes Irene and Lee. And it's my understanding that you've won another award recently, Legislator of the Year. Is that correct?
That's true. And again, my take on it is and I learned this particularly during the floods, you know, and people are quick to criticize individuals in political holding political office as self-serving and self-absorbed. It's just a label that goes with the job. And when I was in front of my own family's home, where they were homeless, they had 8 feet of water in the village of Schoharie. You know, Windham was flooded, all of our region, six of my counties in states of emergency. And I was looking at a pile of debris, which was their whole life and part of my life in front of me. It was a pile 40 feet wide, 30 feet high. On top of the pile was a hutch I had built for my parents as a senior in high school in shop class, smashed, covered with mud. Mm-hmm. And my observation was, in terms of the job and focus on myself, I thought if I'm more concerned about keeping my job than doing it, I shouldn't be here. And so the issue, you just give. And in giving, you know, if people acknowledge it, that's wonderful. If they don't, you have the satisfaction of a job well done. And that's something I've learned, and it's been reinforced through life. So you just do it because it's the right thing to do. And you don't do it looking for applause or accolades. That the best service is the one that folks don't know about. And that's it's just very rewarding. So when folks acknowledge it's always appreciated, but it just gives you encouragement to do more.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
And that to me is, you know, we oftentimes talk about what did the founding fathers intend? What did they mean when they wrote the Constitution? And what you just said, that is truly the essence of America, is, you know, helping others, helping your fellow man and woman, and living selflessly. And a lot of the founding fathers politically weren't necessarily ambitious. I think historically they usually looked down on ambition and were skeptical about people who, might be really political, like Aaron Burr, who shot and killed in a duel my most favorite historical character, Alexander Hamilton. After Hamilton had exposed this plan Burr had put together to try to become governor of New York and have it secede from the Union with the New England states.
I guess just in that vein, there was a plaque that my great aunt had given me. It had a quote from Albert Einstein, and I don't think of Albert Einstein with quotes other than E equals MC square or whatever.
Yeah,
But the quote read something like this, strive not to be a person of success, but rather a person of value. And that speaks volumes. That's where we should be.
Somebody like Jackie Chan.
Oh, I love Jackie Chan. Oh, he's great.
Your next item. I am Jackie Chan. My Life in Action by Jackie Chan, autobiography. And you know, earlier you were saying, you made a comment that you're old, which I'm shocked by, because I'd say maybe 45.
46.
Yeah.
Yeah, boosted another 10 years.
And a half.
56.
55 this year.
Okay. Yeah.
55?
55 and still alive.
But you know,
is that
how that goes?
That's a song, isn't it?
I think that's a song.
That's a song.
No, that was a speed limit. 55 and stay alive. That's an old speed limit.
No, who's that? Who is it sang that song?
No, I don't know.
55.
Oh, I can't drive 55.
Yeah.
But I was looking up about Jackie Chan. He is 61.
No, stop it.
Jackie Chan is 61 years
old.
No way.
And I thought, so
you're
when you mentioned that.
Way.
What way?
Way.
There we go, exactly.
When you mentioned that earlier today, I was like, oh my gosh, he's just like Jackie Chan.
Oh, he's amazing.
I mean, 5 years younger.
Oh, he's just an amazing athlete. The first time I saw him was in a movie called The Big Brawl. And it was before I knew about martial arts. And they had all these people on the screen competing with each other in combat in different ways, and he looked more like an acrobat, and I was just fascinated. But this man, for example, I've watched him do a push up, do a complete barrel roll, and land back on your hands.
Wow!
And he does all his own stunts. I'm like, how'd you do that? I can't even dream of it.
Before I broke my arm, I could do it.
Could you do it with one hand, no less?
I couldn't do it, no.
With someone sitting on your back, right? Exactly.
You know, Jackie Chan, when he was a child, his parents nicknamed him Pow Pow because that's Chinese for cannonball, and he was just always rolling around on the ground and doing acrobatic kind of stuff. And he got the name Jackie because in Australia, while attending Dixon College, he was doing some construction work and was being mentored by a gentleman named Jack. And hanging out all the time with this Jack, he got the nickname Little Jack, and that just turned into Jackie. Well, we're running out of time, and I think we should get on to your last song. It's Give It All You Got by Chuck Mangione.
Why that song?
Well, it's I grew up in the 70s, and I'm a trumpet player, and Chuck.
Whoa, 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 whoa! You never told us that.
Yeah, seriously, what else is...
I'm not accomplished. and you're either accomplished or you're not, and you're either practicing. It's very visible. If you're a brass player, you're either on or you're off.
Can I throw anything else in here? During my days, I've been brain surgery.
Yeah. What? So, yeah. But no, he was just cool. We always, at that age, anyone who played trumpet idolized him. And there were some others, other phenomenal trumpet players at the time. But
did you know that he played? He has a character in King of the Hill.
I didn't know that.
Right. When we come back, that's after hilarious. Listening to the song, I will expand on that
that's
piece
hilarious.
Of information. Listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations. That was Give It All You've Got by Chuck Mangione. Thanks, Pete. That was fantastic.
Oh, it's just fun. Yeah, just fun.
Now, do you know that Chuck Mangione had a character in King of the Hill?
Stop it.
I'm going to read it. I'm just going to read a little tiny Stop bit. It. I could read a lot more, but I'm just going to read this tiny little bit. Chuck Mangione has a recurring voice acting role on the animated television series King of the Hill. In it, he portrays himself as a celebrity spokesman for Mega Low Mart, although his animated form appears much younger than his current age, more closely resembling how he looked in the late 70s, always wearing the white and red shirt from the cover of his Feel So Good album.
Perfect. Oh, how perfect. Yeah. I'll have to look for that.
So try, the next time you see, you know, a listing for, you know, King of the Hill, have a wee look. See if you can see John Mangione. You know.
Well, we got to wrap it up. Pete, we just have one more question for you.
Sure.
How do you take your coffee?
Decaf, mostly. But I'll once in a while, a little sugar and cream just as a treat. But sometimes black. But I drink a lot of tea. But
what coffee, kind of tea?
Usually an herbal tea. Right. Yeah, an herbal tea, usually.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Pete.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you.
Great. It's been great. I've really enjoyed
thank you guys. Thank you.
Chat with you.
Went quick. Hi, I'm Pete Lopez, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC, thanks.